26 is let the ignorant people, let the common people carry on with their duties. Let them carry on with their duties. Don't try and stop them. But you perform your duty very nicely, and you set a very good example of performing your duty in Krishna consciousness. And then from your example of duty in Krishna consciousness, then these ignorant people, let's come to here. So then these ignorant people, they'll get the right idea, and then they'll gradually sort of modify their activities, and they'll eventually become Krishna conscious themselves. Now we could apply that to the situation where you have people who are already very established householders living outside, and they already have a family, they're already like firmly entrenched in their position, but they want to practice Krishna consciousness. So we wouldn't, unless there are very extraordinary circumstances, we wouldn't encourage them to break up their family situation and come and live in the temple, like as brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, like that. We would encourage them to stay where they are and just include, add Krishna consciousness to their lives. And in that way they could advance very nicely. So this is the type of situation that Krishna is referring to here. We should allow people to carry on with their regular duties, but through our own examples, show them how they can improve in their natural position. They can improve and gradually become Krishna conscious. 27, Krishna's talking about the perception of the average person. Everyone thinks that I'm the doer, I'm this body, and my body is acting, so that means I'm acting, so I'm the doer. Anyway, Krishna sort of throws that verse in there. I mean, it's an important point, but it's kind of there on its own in this particular section. So 28, 29, Krishna is continuing on with the same point, that we should engage in nishkam karma yoga, cultivate detachment, keep fully engaged, and of course be in knowledge of the spiritual goal which is there. And again in 29 he refers to the common people, so we shouldn't unsettle them, but we should help them to advance in a natural way. And then 30 is a very nice verse. It's kind of like a description in a nutshell of what is Nishkam Karma Yoga, surrendering all your works to Krishna with full knowledge of Krishna, with no desire for profit, no claim to proprietorship, free from lethargy, fight or act, perform your natural duty according to your position in Varnashram. Prabhupada makes some interesting comments in the purport. This is verse 30. He says, right at the beginning, the Lord instructs that one has to become fully Krishna conscious to discharge duties as if in military discipline. Such an injunction may make things a little difficult, but nevertheless, duties must be carried out with dependence on Krishna, because that is the constitutional position of the living entity. So we, you know, for us that's important. We have to really be very serious and not allow ourselves to get easily deviated by our material desires and material conceptions, but very steadfastly practice Krishna consciousness. Krishna's glorifying this process, that if you do like this, then you'll become liberated. Muchyante tepi karmavi. You'll become liberated from the bondage of karma. But 32, he gives a warning that if you don't do this, if you don't take up this practice of karma yoga, nishkam karma yoga, then you'll be ruined. It'll be a big disaster. You know, in Vedic literature, you get this system that the author, after having described some very nice process, he'll give a benediction that if you read this or if you do this, then you'll get such and such. You may have come across that before. But then he also immediately gives, I don't know what the Sanskrit term is, but the basic idea is that he then gives a curse. He gives a benediction. It's not exactly curse, but he gives like a prediction of what will happen if you don't do it. First of all, he gives a benediction that this is very nice what we've just talked about, and you'll benefit so much from doing it. Very good. But then he says, if you don't do it, you're going to be in serious trouble. So here Krishna is doing the same thing. It's a very nice process, nishkam karma. You can get liberation. But if you don't do it, you're ruined. So then, let's see. Where are we? So there's another subsection here, 33 to 35. Yeah, Krishna's now bringing up the point that nishkam karma yoga is very nice. You can achieve liberation. But if you're not careful, then you can fall down. Even while you're trying to practice nishkam karma yoga. First of all, in 33, he's recommending you just act in a way which is natural to you. You don't have to repress your nature. But then what is that nature? What is that nature that we have? The nature of our body, the nature of our mind. It's material. And material means that there's a distinct possibility you can get dragged down. So it's not just because you feel like acting in a certain way that therefore you should just do it. Like Arjuna, he's a Kshatriya. So he should fight out of duty in the right situation. But he shouldn't just go around attacking people. And, you know, like killing people and robbing people. He shouldn't do that. So it is a fact that to act according to your nature is very easy and very good. And you can advance nicely if you do your duties in Krishna consciousness. But if you're not careful, that same bodily nature and same mental nature can actually drag you down. So in 34, Krishna says that there are certain principles. He says there are certain regulative principles to control the bodily nature. And you have to follow those rules and regulations. Prabhupada says in the purport that even on the royal road there can be an accident. So even though the process is so nice, you can achieve liberation, it's so natural, you can act in a way which comes very naturally to you, but still watch out, because you're dealing with Maya, you're dealing with the material energy, with your senses, with your mind, and you've got to be very careful with your senses and your mind. So you need to follow rules and regulations. Now, in between verse 34 and 35, Arjuna makes a little protest. Arjuna says that, you know, this is all very well, but right now, I think I'd rather be a Brahmin. Right now, I feel inspired. I want to be a Brahmin. I don't want to be a Kshatriya any longer. So I think I'll just become a Brahmin. Then I can be very renounced. I don't have to fight. So then Krishna speaks verse 35. Better to do the duty which really does come naturally to you. Even though it may seem difficult, and it may appear that some other duty, someone else's duty, may be more suitable. But don't do like that. Even though your own duty seems to be difficult, stick with it. Don't accept a position which is not really natural to you, and then you're going to risk falling down. Prabhupada actually said, now of course we're following Varnashram to some extent, but it's not like we're rigidly following Varnashram. It's sort of like a qualified version of Varnashram which we're following. So how are we to decide what is my duty? What is my nature? It can be a little difficult to really understand our own bodies and our own minds. But Srila Prabhupada once said that any duty that you're given by the spiritual master or by the representatives of the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada said that you should accept that duty, that this is being given to me directly by Krishna. We should have that sort of attitude. That whatever duty is coming to us in the bona fide line from the spiritual master or from those who are representing the spiritual master, we should understand this is coming actually from Krishna. So even though that duty sometimes may seem a little difficult, still we should stick at it. I mean, as a general rule, we should stick at it and not be too easily deviated. So now in the last section, starting from verse 36, Arjuna, he wants some more information about this idea of attachment and aversion. The idea which has just come up now, that you know, there's a certain danger in indulging in your bodily nature, in indulging in your material nature there. There's some danger there. So Arjuna wants some clarification about that, about these dangers. So he asks, what is it which influences us to perform non-religious activities, sinful activities? And Krishna, in verse 37, gives a very straight answer, karma esha, it's lust only. We have these material bodies, and part of the nature of the material body is that it has desire. We want to gratify our senses. So this you have to be very careful about. And it's a very powerful influence. Very powerful influence. And if what tends to happen is that it transforms into anger, which is also very disruptive. Because satisfying your lust is not easy. These senses are not very good, actually, for really getting good pleasure. So you may try to enjoy with so many lusty desires, but you may find that you don't enjoy it. At least you don't enjoy as you wanted to. So then you get frustrated. So lust turns to anger. Then in verses 38, 39, 40, Krishna talks about how this lust influences us. Three degrees of covering. If any of you are asleep, try and wake up. Madhava. So lust, he talks about three degrees of lust. Fire covered by smoke, mirror covered by dust, or embryo covered by womb. Fire covered by smoke is like the human level. Wherever there's smoke, you know there's fire. So the smoke indicates fire. So the consciousness of the human being indicates the spiritual nature of the living being. even though the consciousness is very covered, but still some spiritual nature is indicated. Mirror covered by dust, that's like the animal level. Very, very covered. And then embryo covered by the womb, that's like the tree or plant life level. Very, very covered. So these are all coverings in terms of the degree of lust. In other words, the plant is more lusty, the animal is somewhat less, and the human is somewhat less. Then in 40, Krishna talks about where lust is situated in our being, our senses, our mind and intelligence. And in 41, he explains how we should attack this enemy of lust. How do we attack the enemy of lust? On the level of the senses. Regulate the senses. This is a very important thing. You have to regulate your senses. If you don't regulate your senses, then any amount of trying to control your mind and intelligence won't help so much. So Krishna is saying, lust is there, mind, intelligence and senses, but particularly you attack lust by regulating your senses. Then he explains in 42 the hierarchy. Hierarchy is that you have dull matter, in other words your sense objects, dull matter, then higher to dull matter is the senses. Higher than the senses is the mind. Higher than the mind is the intelligence. And higher than the intelligence is the self. But we see in material lives that this hierarchy is turned around. That people are serving the senses. And what are the senses doing? The senses are being dragged by the sense objects. The sound vibration is coming. It's just matter. Material sound. But the sense of hearing thinks, oh yes. He becomes captivated by that sound. And the mind follows, the intelligence follows. And the self thinks that, oh yes, my business is to hear this music. So it's turned around. Completely turned around. The sense objects are dictating. And we are, everything else is following after those sense objects. So in the last verse, verse 43, Krishna is explaining that we have to turn it around in the proper way, become properly situated in relation to the sense objects, in relation to our senses and our minds. We should dictate to them, not that they should dictate to us. So, on the basis of spiritual knowledge, knowing your position transcendental to the senses, mind and intelligence, you should steady yourself, and by spiritual strength, by full engagement in devotional service, overcome this lust. So let's see, let us finish here. Any questions or comments?
Let me explain this 13 verse, 13 chapter, this point about uselessness of preaching about the vegetarianism. Because I know it's also referenced that in this beginning of 10 countries, this verse that only butcher and one who cannot kill his soul will be not attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam. Some devotees also say that, like this, organize this cooking lesson, yeah. It's also preaching, but to express prayer, this is useless, so could you somehow...
Well, it's useless if it's not used to bring people to the proper standard of taking prasad. That's a fact. We're not here simply to propagate vegetarianism as such, but we may use it to help people come to the point of offering their food to Krishna, understanding the value of doing that. I mean, that's the idea, actually, of these cooking courses. I mean, maybe sometimes even the people who are teaching the cooking courses, they might not be aware of that. Maybe. But actually, that is really the idea. To bring people to the Krishna conscious standard. Not just to bring them to the point of becoming more pious materially. So it's part of, you know, these vegetarian cooking classes and so on. They're part of the process of bringing people to Krishna consciousness. And they should be taught in that way. They should be taught in that way. Otherwise, well, Krishna's saying here. And it's there in black and white. If you just prepare food for your personal sense enjoyment, you're eating sin. So we don't want to, you know, we would rather bring people to the right point than just change their position in material existence a bit. We all know that everything you do in Krishna consciousness, not only chanting is the main thing or the most potent process, but every part of our life in Krishna consciousness, every type of devotional activity cleanses you of sin, of your accumulated sin from many lifetimes. And taking prasad is one of those activities, like circumambulating Tulsi Devi. Just by circumambulating her, Brahmahatya, Vatanicha, you become freed of even of the sin of killing a Brahmin. So yeah, I mean, they're all parts, they're all purifying. But of course, you know, as we explained, the process, like this whole process of the yoga letter, is going on in a supervised way. It's not you just independently decide that, oh well, I think I'll practice Sakam Karma Yoga under my own direction. No, it's always going on under direction of a spiritual master, a spiritual teacher. So the spiritual teacher, like Srila Prabhupada, he presented Bhagavad Gita to us, but he also explained that the correct perspective, that it's not simply enough to only eat prasad, but you must eat only prasad. As far as your eating goes, you must eat only prasad. So, you know, we're also not to read Bhagavad Gita without the, you know, without things being clarified by devotees, isn't it? So, yeah, eating prasad, I mean, we all know that, right? It's a very important purifying activity, but it's not the only one, but it must be there. That's like that. Another
two questions. When it says that master situated in the senses and aligned and the It's made it very difficult because it's situated in the intelligence.
Well, it's, yeah. Intelligence is sort of like the capital within ourselves. With our intelligence, we direct our lives. So the fact that lust has got hold of our capital, that's very bad. It's a fact. So Krishna said in the last verse that with spiritual intelligence, you should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, and then by spiritual strength conquer this enemy, and you should regulate your senses. So this whole process is not going on the basis of our own intelligence, but we accept the higher intelligence of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, and of the spiritual master, and in that way, you know, the lusty intelligence is overcome. Yeah. But it, yeah.
general, you're giving us a lot of information that's separate from the own view. Yeah. So would we be expected to know this for the gentle, or what you're giving us a combination?
That's a good question. I'm going to tell you the questions to the test. Because if, you know, if we try and test you on, say, like the first test will be on the first seven chapters, I think. So if you have to learn the full first seven chapters, that's an awful lot to learn. So I'm going to tell you the main, what I consider to be the main points. Like one thing is, you're going to have to know the names of all 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita in order for the first test, which will be 1 week from today. 1 week from today, yeah. Then you're going to have to know Arjuna's reasons for not wanting to fight. I told you about that earlier. Arjuna, there were five reasons why Arjuna wasn't going to fight, including indecision. So we're going to want you to know those things. We're going to want you to learn a few verses. I'll tell you those. I'll write up a whole list of verses on the board for our next class, which will be on Thursday. And we'll want you to select a few of those. Say like three or four verses to learn. Something like that. And some other things which we haven't come across yet because there are a few more chapters to go. But from these chapters, we'd like you to know, we want you to know what is this yoga ladder. Just very briefly, animal life, like one sentence on each part. So it's like it would be like a paragraph, say. What is animal life? Then after animal life there's karmakanda. What is karmakanda? Then there's sakam karma yoga. What is it? What is nishkam karma yoga? So those three things. Has everyone got that? Yeah? Any other? Well, we are very fortunate. We come under Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So therefore, like we described the other day, Prabhupada said it's like an elevator. Now, normally you'd have to go through this whole thing of varnashram and this and that and gradual detachment and still doing your duty and, you know, like that. So now there are elements. There are elements of varnashram in ISKCON. I mean, they're very strong elements. But there's no doubt that we are not following varnashram as such, like strictly. Just the basic outline of varnashram we're following. You know, like the temple president, some devotees, in the morning they clean the temple floor, so that's like a sutra activity. Then they go out and distribute books, that's like brahminical activity. You know? So, I mean, the basic outline is there, but it's definitely not varnashram. So by Lord Chaitanya's expertise and Srila Prabhupada's expertise in applying the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, we have this like accelerated process where from the level of animal life, with due respect to all of us or you, we're more or less coming from the level of animal life or something like that. Well, we're coming straight into bhakti yoga. We're not having to go through all these other purifying processes before we take to bhakti yoga. And that's in fact why Prabhupada, if you notice right at the beginning or in chapter 2, where Krishna starts talking about this buddhi yoga, he starts introducing the idea of karma yoga. In a number of places, Prabhupada just says devotional service. He doesn't make a big distinction between karma yoga and devotional service. Even sometimes where in the Sanskrit it says karma yoga, he says devotional service. Because it's an accelerated process. So, you know, when you're on a fast...